Hey, you need to listen to your advocate. He's protecting you from me. Because in his heart, deep down, at the bottom of his soul, he knows I'm the one. I'm the man. Hey, you look at me when I'm talking to you, or we can straighten this out right now.
Today's word is the word pwned. The word pwned originated from the word owned, which derived from the word own, which came from the word kept.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
My client!
Mama Monster!
Conquered the street!
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat! Delete!
You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
Welcome to episode 504 of the Sala Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, July 16, 2017. I am the Sala Monster, and not feeling too great this week. It has not been a fun 36 hours for me, for lots of different reasons, all of which I won't get into right now. But the stress of it all put me in urgent care, so I got out a few hours ago. I was bound and determined to get this show done no matter what. And so if it's a bit abbreviated this week, I apologize. But that would be the reason why. Keep supporting the show through Audible. Audibletrial.com/Sala Monster is our link. You can get the new Justin Roberts book, which is available in audiobook format. I'm going to be talking to Justin very soon. Lots of other wrestling books on there. You can get them for free when you sign up for a 30-day trial of the service. We got a lot of clicks this week on the Audible link, but the number of clicks as compared to the number of signups was kind of lopsided. So, again, if you use the link, you got to go through the signup process. Please do. And if you don't like it, if it's not for you, you can cancel within those 30 days. You get to keep your free book. So that's audibletrial.com/Sala Monster. And become a PayPal VIP. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. I want to say thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez, who has been an amazing supporter of the show for some time now, as has Deadpool James Herrera, Chuck Lunatic Lentz, another longtime listener, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, the Florida Freebird Brian Pissera, the Reflection of Perfection Abraham Lara, Massgrave Micah Harshaw, Raymond the Mountie Medina, Jerome You're Going Down Eugenio, Judge and Jury Justin Girardi, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, Brian the Cleaver Carpenter, The Show Off, Corey Van Dam, The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard, Aim for the Head, Andrew Jorlog, The Brooklyn Bombers, Jamel and Isaiah Walker, The Mississauga Missionary, Steve Kenny, Better Than Raw, Robert Michalshek, The Main Attraction, Jackson Scott, Save the World, Sean Tilly, sending a very belated happy birthday to Jason Martinez, Stephen Handyman Halistick, The Malaysian Mastermind, Samuel Te, Anna Montastic Montenegro, Brett Brickfist Broad, or Broad, I'm sorry, Broad. he was very specific. He said it's pronounced as Vince Russo would say it, and Vince Russo would only say it one way. So Brett Brickfist Broad, thank you for the donation. And Adam El Grapadura Nobles, or Nobles. He didn't really specify how to pronounce it. I assume it's Nobles. But he says it translates to the stapler. So why can't I just call you the stapler? But Adam, thank you very much. I want to give a shout out to Montese Antoine Moore, good friend of the show. He is the co-host of a brand new show on the High Spots Network called Swerve Talk, which is not hosted by Vince Russo. It is hosted by Shane Strickland, a.k.a. Killshot from Lucha Underground, Episode 1. Features Moose from GFW, Eddie Kingston, and Leo Rush on his way soon to NXT. So I'm not sure if episode 1 is up just yet. I know they just wrapped it a few days ago, but when it does go up, if it's not already, you can check them out on HighSpotsWrestlingNetwork.com. Thoughts go out to Matt Capitelli. Remember I talked about him last week, former Tough Enough alum, was diagnosed with a brain tumor about 10 years ago. He had posted on Facebook that the tumor had returned in his brain. He was having a biopsy to see if it was benign, as if it was malignant. And the diagnosis is a grade 4 glioblastoma, which is about the most aggressive form of brain cancer you can get. The prognosis on that is not good. So that is absolutely horrible news. But he seems to be in good spirits, all things considered. I'll tell you what, he's a lot braver than a lot of people would be in that same situation. So here's wishing him all the best. If you missed my Great Balls of Fire review last weekend, you can check it out. It's on the YouTube channel. I want to say thank you to the over 80,000 of you who have watched the video so far. One of you guys pointed out to me a few days ago, you said, you know, I had double the amount of views as I have subscribers on the channel. Well, it's now actually triple. I think it's more than triple the number of views on that video. So let's work to get those subs up. I know it hasn't been a number one priority for me, but if you have not already subscribed to the YouTube channel, please go ahead and do so. You know, my quick thoughts on the show are very simple. I thought it was one of the better pay-per-views of the year. I would hesitate to call it the best, but it was up there. I thought overall it was a very good show. I enjoyed the main event despite the finish and despite how brief it was. It was longer than Brock's match at WrestleMania, but not by much. You know, the stuff with the ambulance match, I thought that was well done. Nothing I would really call bad on the show. Pretty much went from, you know, okay to good all the way up to very good. So I give it a thumbs up. And the poll results, over 3,100 of you voted, 78% thumbs up, 22% thumbs down. So clearly I am not in the minority in the viewpoint that Great Balls of Fire turned out to be a pretty good show. I wonder if that means we're going to get more balls next year or if this was just a one-off. I guess if Vince McMahon listens to, like, Chubby Checker next year, I guess it'll be, you know, WWE presents The Twist. That'll be the pay-per-view next year. WWE taped the Mae Young Classic this week. All but the finals, I believe, are now done. It'll go up on demand on the network August 28th, 2 days after Mayweather knocks out McGregor. No match spoilers here, so you don't have to worry about that. They did air the introductions, kind of the roll call of all the participants on the network already, and it's up on WWE's YouTube channel if you missed it. It's an introduction to all, I think, 32 female competitors. These are the names of the women officially in the tournament here. I'm going to run through all the names, and I'm going to start with Kairi Sane, the former Kairi Hojo from Stardom in Japan, the pirate princess herself, my pick to win it all, is in the Mae Young Classic. And if you were concerned, as I was, about her not being able to use her giant elbow of death, all I'll say is, you will be very happy. Mrs. Johnny Gargano herself, Candice LeRae, is in the tournament. Sarah Logan, Bianca Belair, Abby Lath, Serena Deeb. Yes, straight edge society Serena. It's easy for me to say. Back in WWE, she is in this tournament. I guess we'll see how they use her, but maybe she's kind of filling the Brian Kendrick role from the Cruiserweight Classic, kind of the older star trying to get redemption. Rachel Evers, the former Rachel Ellering, is in. We've seen her a bunch of times on NXT. Santana Garrett is another we've seen on NXT before. Very happy for her. I can never understand why they just didn't sign her outright. Just didn't make sense to me. Tessa Blanchard is in the Cruiserweight, or in the, my God, I really don't feel good. I'm delirious, and I don't mean I'm booking ROH either. Dakota Kai is in the tournament, Vanessa Bourne, Xia Li, Sage Beckett, Kaylee Ray, Toni Storm, Marty Bell of TNA fame, Mia Yim, formerly Jade in TNA, Lacey Evans, Nicole Savoy, Aisha Raymond, Reyna Gonzalez, Piper Niven, formerly Viper from ICW. Still waiting for ICW to be added to the network. It's supposed to happen. I'm just not sure what the holdup is. Miranda Salinas, Renee Michelle, Princesa Sujhit, Mercedes Martinez, Jazzy Gabbert, Tenera Conti, Zeta, Rhea Ripley, Kavita Devi, and finally, Shayna Baszler, one of the four horsewomen, the original four horsewomen, not the WWE version. And because she is in the tournament, her fellow horsewoman Ronda Rousey was in the house cheering her from ringside. I think all three other ones were there. One of whom, by the way, is Marina Shafir, who is engaged to Roderick Strong. We just saw her on NXT about 2 weeks ago. So those are the participants. Jim Ross and Lita are handling the announcing. We got a little bit of JR and Lita on that introductory special. We got to hear them together, and Lita was a little rocky. We'll see how she is once the show actually starts, but, you know, she was a little, she was okay. we'll see how she does. Medusa, I guess, is also helping out. I think she's doing some of the backstage interviews. August 28th, again, is when the first batch of four episodes drops. I think a week later comes the next batch. And then the finals on the network, September 12th, that'll be live wherever SmackDown is that night after the show goes off the air. It'll take the place of 205 Live. I still think it's a big mistake to do that. I think the finals should be held at Full Sail, but if you're going to do it from an arena, you don't do it after SmackDown. They don't do the Cruiserweights any good. They certainly don't do them any favors. Here you're going to have some women the fans may not know who they are. You know, and it's your finals. It's your final show. You want it to be a big deal. You want it to get a good response from the crowd. I just think that's a bad move. I don't really want to spend too much time talking about the stuff with Paige and Alberto El Moron over here because it's been talked about to death. I'm sure you're sick of hearing about it. I'm sick of reading about it. But it was a big story this week. They were caught on film, on audio, squabbling, fighting at the airport. I guess they were on their way. Alberto had an independent show to go to. He never did make it. And there's been just a ton of fallout from it. At first, you know, the report came out, Orlando police, that it was Del Rio who was being investigated for domestic battery. His name was the name that was listed. He hasn't been charged. He hasn't been arrested. I guess the investigation is ongoing. Paige then came out on social media and said, no, this is all just a big misunderstanding. There was a woman, a female fan who came over, and I think she threw something. It was completely nonsensical and made no sense. Paige, by the way, has changed her story a whole bunch of times since then. Paige's story has changed more than TNA has changed networks, okay, which is a lot. And she has not done herself any favors here. She posted this long explanation online about, no, I was the one who was, you know, charged or written up for battery. Which, again, who are you going to believe? You going to believe the police or are you going to believe Paige? I know who I'm going to believe. So she comes up with this cockamamie story, you know, just clearly covering for him, whether it's something he wanted her to do or not. The fact is, this woman is clearly in some sort of abusive relationship, be it physical, verbal, you know, they're always fighting. They broke up a few weeks ago, then they got back together. And I guess the story was that Paige was on the phone and, you know, she has an uncle, I think, who is dying. I don't know what he has, if he has cancer or whatever it is. And Alberto made a very nasty comment, something to the effect of that, I hope he dies, which is pretty nasty to say something like that. She threw a drink on him because there was some talk about how he reeked of alcohol, which he would have if she threw, let's say, a beer on him. But, you know, again, there are witnesses, there's audio of what happened. Paige is storming out and she's saying things like, get away from me, you ruined my life. You know, all you did, you abused me, all this other stuff. We hear it with our own ears, right? There's irrefutable evidence here, things that were said, things that were done. Paige, again, posts this long explanation. It's all just a big misunderstanding, putting the blame on her. This is not going to end well. I'm not the only one who has said that, but I'll pile on like the rest. This will not end well. This is not a relationship that's going to end with a handshake. It's not you, it's me. Let's go our separate ways. Paige will go do her thing. Alberto will be like, okay, he'll go do his. That's not how this is going to end. That is not how this ends. Even if it doesn't end and you know, everyone's talking about how, oh, there's going to be like a Benoit Nancy thing. God forbid. God forbid. And I'm not going to sit here and say that. But it could, right? You could go down that road. Or it could just be a very, very nasty breakup. But however it ends, it ain't going to be pretty. And Paige has enough sense about her where apparently, you know, in the audio, she was making comments like, you ruined my career, you ruined my life. And you know, she's not stupid. I mean, she's made a lot of stupid decisions, but clearly she must know that this is not doing her career any favors. And she's going to look back on this one day and she's going to realize how badly she screwed up. Now, you know, when the news first came out, I guess last year, about them being in a relationship, you know, my whole attitude at the time was live and let live. Everybody was passing judgment. Oh, this is a bad idea. Oh, she shouldn't do this. I mean, you know, it wasn't a great idea. But again, live and let live. She's an adult. She can make her own decisions. She's not a baby. And, you know, people talking about the age gap and everything. The age gap, you know, Paige's parents, Paige's mother and father have a bigger age gap than the gap between Paige and Alberto. I mean, Paige's parents are about 18 years apart. And they're happily married for many, many years. So again, the age thing isn't what really bothered me. But you look at the situation now and you know, Alberto's got problems. He's got anger management issues. Remember that challenge he issued to Triple H and the Usos? Come fight me, I'll kick your ass, I'll beat the shit out of you, come to my restaurant after SmackDown. I guess that never happened. But, you know, people have been circulating photos online of bruises on Paige's arms. We don't know. We don't know what the bruises are from. I mean, we could kind of speculate, but we don't know. And also, I want to mention this, too, because in all the hoopla about what happened this week, Paige's own brothers, her own family, went on Facebook. They went public with their concerns, and they were saying, they outright said that Alberto beats their sister. And they're begging people, please step in, please help, please do something about this. And there were a lot of people who jumped on Paige's family. Why are you going on Facebook? Why are you airing out dirty laundry on social media? Why don't you go ahead and do something yourself? Why don't you reach out to your own sister? Look, I'm sure they've already done that. I'm sure that they have already tried. I mean, who are you to say that the family hasn't already tried? Wouldn't them going on Facebook and doing this be a last resort? I can't jump on the family for that. I mean, I'm not as familiar with the family as some of you guys might be. I've got some emails from people who say, well, you know, the Knight family here in the UK has a certain reputation. If they could, they would turn this into an angle. You know what? Maybe they would. Maybe they would. Maybe they're all a bunch of sleaze bags. I don't know them as well as other people do. Maybe it's a Fritz Von Erich situation and they would do just that. But as far as jumping on the family because, well, why would you go on Facebook instead of reaching out to her directly? I'm sure they already have. But again, she's 23, 24? She's an adult. She's not a child. She can make her own decisions. She makes big girl money working for WWE. So, what are they supposed to do? Beat her over the head with a club and drag her back to England? That's not how this works. And it's got to be frustrating for them to see what's going on here. You know, there's also talk of drugs being involved. Are they? I don't know. No evidence has come out to that effect. But there was talk of cocaine. Alberto made a comment, check her bags. You know, check her bags. She's got the cocaine. Look, it's pretty obvious that there's something going on here. This guy's probably... This guy clearly has issues. Wouldn't shock me if he was on coke and all boozed up and God knows what else. And, you know, it's a sad situation. That's really all I can say. It put Global Force Wrestling in a terrible position because they just put their championship on this guy. This guy unified both of their belts. He just unified the TNA title and the GFW title. And it's tough because not only is he their champion, not only is he the face of that company, but he's brought his brother in. He had his father on television with him the other night. It's going to be very, very difficult if they let this go forward to completely rid themselves of this guy and his family. So, you know, they took action to their credit, as much credit as you can give them. They suspended him. Now, this was comical. So they announced that they indefinitely suspended El Patron until the investigation is resolved, following the incident at the airport. And like I said, when they made the announcement, I said, good on them. That was the right decision to make. But the fact is, they already have a month of tapings in the can with this guy all over him. This guy's going to be all over television for the next 6 weeks. So they're not going to miss a beat. He'll be all over the program. And also, in the statement, in one breath they say, well, he's indefinitely suspended. And then in the next breath they say, well, he's suspended until the investigation is completed. So which is it? Is he indefinitely suspended, or is he suspended until the investigation is over? What I'm most interested to see is, A, how the investigation plays out, but what happens at that point? This is not the first incident involving this guy. I just got done talking about this guy last week. This guy is an embarrassment. This guy is an embarrassment to that company. He goes out after all the shows. He gets on the microphone. All he can do, he can't shut up about WWE. I said it before the airport incident even happened. Why would you make somebody like this the face of your company? It's pathetic. I don't know how the investigation is going to play out. Maybe it'll play out and he'll be the innocent victim here. I don't buy that for a second, but to me it doesn't matter. It doesn't even matter if he was innocent in this incident or not. This is not a guy who should be the face of this company. This is not the guy that should be a face of any company. This guy has problems. You know, and GFW is in a situation now where they're trying to rebrand. They're trying to just put the past behind them. And now look at the situation they've gotten themselves in. This is Jeff Jarrett. Oh, what a great face of the company. What a great selection that Jeff Jarrett has made here. So they're in a real pickle right now, but they're not even really the issue. The issue is Paige. She's in a bad situation. She needs to get herself out. She needs to get herself out. That's not anybody else's job. Her parents can't do it. WWE, I mean, even there, what can they do? What can they do? She is a grown adult. She may be immature, but she is a grown adult. She makes her own choices. And if this thing ends as badly as it looks like it probably will, whatever the outcome is here, it's going to be a nasty split when things ultimately boil over between these two. You know, look, she will be as complicit as he is, because we all make decisions. Sometimes they're good decisions, sometimes they're bad decisions. For us, we're watching this train wreck unfold, and there's not a whole lot we can do. She's got to want to do something herself. Right now, she's making all the excuses in the world. She's blaming herself. Well, hey, what are you going to do? Raw for Monday night was live from Houston, Texas. Twitter poll, 2,300 votes, 65% thumbs up, 35% thumbs down. Raw's on a roll lately with these polls, and for the first time in a while, Raw actually felt way more exciting than SmackDown, thanks largely to the Lesnar-Joe stuff. The two main things coming out of the show were a fantastic segment with Brock Lesnar, Paul Heyman, Samoa Joe, Roman Reigns, and Kurt Angle. That set the stage for what will probably end up being a fatal four-way at SummerSlam for the Universal title. If not, it should be. And the Kurt Angle storyline is about to reach its big climax. Climax is a good word for it. I think that may literally be the cause of all this if the payoff is what I think it is. The mystery person he's been corresponding with, the big, deep, dark secret that could ruin him, will be revealed tomorrow night. Perfectly timed to happen the week after his documentary aired on the network. The same documentary that featured Dixie Carter on WWE TV for the very first time. And Raw happens to be in Dixie's hometown of Nashville tomorrow night. Oh my. First, a few other things from the show. Big Cass, as I said, might happen after he went heel, is going to be feuding with the Big Show, which makes sense. Big Show worked his ass off to help put over Braun Strowman on his way up. Now he could do the same for Cass. Cass went out there, he was talking about how, I'm going to win the Universal title, I'm going to shove it down everyone's throat. So, Big Show, and he was also talking about, I'll be the one on the Tonight Show representing WWE. So, some of that WWE-NBC Universal synergy right there. Big Show came out, he gave him a headbutt, put him in a front face lock. He started throwing knees at Cass's ribcage. Big Show looked like he was out there getting ready for a big UFC fight. He was getting ready for his UFC debut. Cass bailed at that point. This really is the best way, I think, to use Big Show right now. As far as Enzo, we didn't see him on the show after the ass-whooping that Cass put on him the night before. His future, though, and I knew this would happen. I mean, his future to me is a big question. His mouth will keep him on TV, but doing what? Right? Size-wise, he would make sense for the cruiserweight division. But I think he's... I mean, I really think that the cruiserweight division will only damage him. Whatever value he has. The real money in Enzo, I think, is him as a mouthpiece for someone. And you put him in the cruiserweight division, he's just going to sort of get lost in there. Cass would make the most sense. But they ruined that. You can't do that now. That really is what would have made the most sense. So if not Cass, you find somebody else who can't really maybe talk all that well. And you could do an odd couple pairing and have him strike up a friendship with Enzo. Finn Balor beat the Drifter. This match was better off on TV than the pay-per-view. I thought this was pretty boring. So the match ends. Balor wins. The Hardys come out on stage to congratulate Finn Balor. And they're on their way to the ring for a promo. So all three of them for a moment there are on stage together. Balor and the Hardys, I guess, are now friends after teaming for that one time 2 weeks ago. The announcers even made it a point to mention that Balor was Jeff Hardy's daughter's favorite wrestler. What did I say a few weeks back? The demon Balor against Jeff Hardy. Now we have the perfect setup. Daddy, you suck. I like the demon. There you go. Anyway, the Hardys came out to cut a promo. And I'm going to talk about this promo in a second, because this ties into some other big news on the broken trademark and all that this week. I'm going to talk about that. But they're interrupted by Anderson and Gallows, which leads to a match. Anderson and Gallows win with the Magic Killer. So the Hardys now have a little losing streak going for themselves. The Revival come out. Finally, they're back. I guess Dash Wilder's jaw is now healed up. They come out, they attack Matt and Jeff. That looks to be their next feud. But I'm watching this, right? I'm watching this sequence of events here. And I'm thinking to myself, man, this would have been the perfect setup to have Balor turn on the Hardys and align with Anderson and Gallows. Maybe not even on the show. Maybe this is the first of several steps to get to that point. I'm not saying it had to be last Monday. Maybe in a few weeks or whatever. But you've got all three guys on the same brand, right? I know Anderson and Gallows got a big win on the show, but what are they doing? They're not doing anything. They're doing nothing. What is Finn Balor doing? He's feuding with the Drifter. Maybe not anymore. He beat him. So he's not doing a whole lot of anything. These guys are on the same brand. They're doing nothing. Why not put them together? I mean, don't get me wrong. Balor as a babyface is fine. He's over enough and they need some strong babyfaces. I get that. But it just kills me. The timing is so perfect. Plus, here's another reason I'd love to see it. As we saw later on in this very show, they're already dropping hints at a Shield reunion. You knew it was coming at some point. Obviously, it's coming in the next few months. If they play their cards right, we could end up with a Shield versus Balor Club feud in a few months. Maybe going into Survivor Series or something. I'd be down for that. Sounds good to me. Now, this Hardys promo. We had more teases here for the broken stuff, I think, than at any point since these guys came back. Jeff said maybe now that we've lost, you know, they lost to Sheamus and Cesaro with the pay-per-view, people, you know, think the nostalgia pop is over and maybe we should just fade away and classify ourselves as obsolete. And then Matt points out the gash above his eye from the night before and he drops a broken mention. Sure makes you think that they had reached a deal, right? Or that they were close to a deal with Anthem to settle this stuff once and for all. Then I noticed an interesting Twitter exchange the next day. Matt Hardy replied to somebody on Twitter. He tagged Jeff Jarrett. He tagged Ed Nordholm. He threatened that if they don't come to a resolution quickly on the broken stuff, things are going to get real nasty because they have a lot of dirt on those two guys. We have lots to expose. Were the exact words that Matt Hardy used. Now, this was before Matt's wife, Rebby, went on Twitter. She went on her latest Twitter storm. She's been quiet for a while, but she went on Twitter. She made some comments about Jeff Jarrett. Jarrett was doing a conference call this week. Apparently, Jarrett is going to be doing conference calls every week. I give it 3 weeks before he gives up, by the way. If there's any more scandals like the stuff with El Patron, believe me, these conference calls are not going to last very long. But he was doing a conference call with the media, and he was asked if they were close to a deal with the Hardys to resolve the broken stuff. And he flat out said no. He said they were not. this set off Rebby. She, like I said, she's been quiet for several weeks now, but boy, did this set her off. Every time Jeff Jarrett opens his mouth about them, she goes on a Twitter tirade. And she outright called Jarrett a liar. She said they had agreed to terms just last week. The agreement included a non-disparagement clause where if Rebby said something nasty about Jeff or Impact, she would be fined $5,000. Now, there was a report that went up on Sports Illustrated a few days ago that seems to back all of this up. And by the way, if I was taking sides in a battle between Jarrett and the Hardys, who do I trust, who do I believe? I ain't going with Jarrett. You watch Raw from Monday night, that whole promo reeked of a deal. So yeah, you know what? I take their word for it. I'm positive there was a deal, or they were close to a deal, and then things broke down. But this report in Sports Illustrated is something else. Now, here's what it says. It says, according to sources close to the negotiation, both sides came to terms on an agreement with the Hardys paying $10,000 to $15,000 for the rights to the broken trademark. Which seems kind of low to me, but I guess that was the agreement. The deal would have included a non-disparagement clause, which Rebby mentioned on Twitter. A $1,000 fine would have been levied for the first offense, and then $5,000 for each subsequent offense. The Hardys were even willing to sign off on a press release, publicly ending the ordeal on good terms. But Anthem suddenly wanted 50% of all Hardy revenue, including Jeff Hardy's art and his music, which the Hardys saw as a giant money grab. Yeah, no shit. That is the definition of a money grab. So there was a deal in place. Matt on Twitter said he left TNA because Jeff Jarrett tried to screw him out of money on his deal after everything he did to help keep TNA afloat in 2016. He said Ed Nordholm could end this right now if he wanted to. So they thought they had a deal. Evidently, they told that to WWE, and WWE must have felt that way because they let him go out there and drop all those broken references on Monday night. Now the thing, people sometimes, they talk about WWE, helping the Hardys, or there's, trying to work out a deal with Anthem. My understanding of the whole thing is WWE is not involved in any of that. They're not actively trying to work out any deal. That's up to Matt and Jeff. Matt and Jeff are the ones trying to work out a deal independent of WWE. So WWE is not, up to this point, been involved in any of this legal stuff. Ed Nordholm just keeps stalling. He will not sign off on the deal. And so that is where things stand. He will ultimately decide the fate of this entire thing, whether it ends tomorrow, because it could end tomorrow, or if it goes to court. And if it goes to court, there's going to be a lot of nasty stuff that comes out. So get the popcorn ready. Miz did a Miz TV segment on the show where he gave out a bunch of fake awards to himself and his crew, called them the Mizzies. Dean Ambrose came out, which means this goddamn feud is continuing. But of all the people to come to his aid, although he later said that I was not coming to his aid, even though that's exactly what he did, Seth Rollins comes out. Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose cleaned house. People seem to enjoy seeing that. Backstage later on, Ambrose threw cold water on the idea of there ever being a Shield reunion. And you know what that means. We're totally getting a Shield reunion. Goldust and R-Truth finally had their big match, which was 5 minutes of a dead crowd. That made me sad. Now, somebody asked me on Twitter, would I mind seeing Goldust get one more run with the Intercontinental title? Yeah, I would love to see it. I would love to see Goldust get one more run with that belt after Miz has his run with it. But you know what? If this is how the crowds are going to be for his matches, he'll be lucky if he still has TV time in 6 months. Forget championships. If he's still on the main show, if he's on TV at all in 6 months, it'll be a miracle. Goldust pinned Truth, by the way, with the final cut. The best thing on the show, without question, was this next segment. Kurt Angle called out Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman. Seeing Angle and Lesnar in the ring together, by the way, very cool. Roman Reigns interrupted. The same Roman Reigns who tried to murder Braun Strowman only 24 hours earlier and then fled the scene comes casually walking out like it was all just a dream. Kurt Angle says, "You got a lot of nerve coming out here after what you did last night." And they scripted this awful line for Roman Reigns where he justifies what he did by saying, "Well, in the Attitude Era, you guys did stuff like this all the time. You blew stuff up all the time, which may well be true. But then Kurt Angle just goes, well, that was then, this is now. Which just makes the product seem so lame compared to how it used to be. What an awful answer to an awful piece of dialogue that never should have even been in this promo in the first place. Well, you know, things used to be really cool. Everybody got to do whatever they wanted to do. And Kurt Angle's like, he's like the school principal. Well, that may be how it used to be, but not now. So yeah, that was stupid. Roman said that he did Angle a favor by getting rid of Braun Strowman. He owes him one. And that one was a shot at Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. Fans booed. Vince thinks they're chanting, ooh-ah, like Reigns does before every spear. So your booing means nothing. And by the way, so much for that double turn that they kind of perfectly set up the night before. And I remember what I tweeted out. Do they have the guts? Do they have the balls to actually move ahead with a double turn? The answer is no, of course. I knew they didn't have the balls. I mean, I'm not surprised. But, hey, let's look at the silver lining here. If they keep this guy babyface, they could still do the Shield reunion idea at some point, which would be difficult to do if Roman went heel. But this was certainly tailor-made for a double turn scenario, and the fact that Roman walked out there like just nothing ever happened. Nothing was any different than it was the week before. It's just such a wasted opportunity. All because one man has this wet dream in his mind for this one match that he just will not let go of, and everybody else be damned. One man has his vision. Well, hey, I'll give him credit for being consistent with it. He will not let this thing go. He is the most stubborn man in the world. So Paul Heyman actually endorsed the idea of doing Reigns and Lesnar at SummerSlam. He was all ready to go for this idea. He could not wait to see the Beast against Roman Reigns. And Brock yanks the mic out of his hand, and he just goes, you gotta be kidding me. Says to Roman, you don't deserve shit. And by the way, Brock does not give a shit about your kids either. Brock was great here. Brock is Brock. Brock is not meant to speak for extended periods of time. A lot of the time when Brock steals the microphone out of Heyman's hands, Heyman will put his head in his hands. That's kind of what I do. But in this case, Brock was great. He said exactly what he had to say. And it's funny because you could kind of tell that he's fishing around sometimes in his head for the words. So he got that great line off, you don't deserve shit. It got a great reaction. And then he didn't know where to go. So you could see the words like floating around in his head. So then he just sort of smiles and he goes, you don't deserve it, my man. I'm like, okay, somebody take the mic out of his hand now. Samoa Joe came out at this point. This is when things got really good. Joe has very quickly ascended to the top of the company when it comes to promos. I would say right now he's number one. He's tops in the entire company. I don't care what brand, Raw, SmackDown, or NXT. He is number one in that department. And Joe told Brock, you didn't beat me last night. You escaped me. Sooner or later, I'm putting your ass to sleep. Heyman all of a sudden gets very animated. Very defensive, very animated. Absolutely dead set against the idea of Joe getting a rematch. It was like night and day. Roman, hey, let's do the match right now. Joe, he wanted no part of Joe. And I thought that was awesome because it really was the best possible endorsement of Joe they could give him. The fact that Lesnar's own advocate would rather him face Roman Reigns because he's absolutely terrified of Samoa Joe. You know, that if given the chance again, that Joe would be the one to take the belt from Lesnar. So I like that. And I wouldn't be surprised, by the way, if that was Heyman's idea to put that in the promo. Would not shock me at all. In fact, I'm almost positive it was. So Joe and Lesnar go nose to nose. Fans were all amped up. Lesnar looks over at Roman while Joe is speaking. And Joe just says to him, look at me when I'm talking to you. Brock was smiling the whole time. He looked like he was out there having fun. Not enough fun to work more dates, but fun nonetheless. And when Roman finally piped up, because everybody was so focused on Joe and Brock, and they were in the zone, all of a sudden when Roman pipes up and starts talking smack to Joe, I'm not saying Roman was bad. I mean, he was fine. He played his role fine in the segment. He got that one good line off about, you know, go ask Braun Strowman if you could find him or something like that. But boy, when he spoke up, boy, did he feel like the third wheel in this segment. Fourth wheel. I would even say fourth wheel, if you count Heyman. He just sort of blended into the background there for a while, like Jim Comey trying to blend into a pair of White House drapes. That was Roman Reigns in this segment. So Kurt Angle just announces, he goes, Roman Reigns and Samoa Joe, one-on-one, next week on Raw. The winner will get Brock Lesnar for the championship at SummerSlam. And as Joe pointed out in his promo, Roman has never beaten him. They've had two matches on television. Roman has yet to defeat him, which does not bode well for Joe's chances of making it three in a row. That's what worries me. The obvious outcome here for this match tomorrow night, Braun Strowman gets involved, does some sort of, you know, you do some sort of non-decision. It leads to a fatal four-way for the championship with Lesnar, Joe, Reigns, and Strowman at SummerSlam. There is zero chance of a three-way. All anybody was talking about this week, I mean, now everybody is talking about a four-way, but for a few days, there were a three-way, a triple threat. I'm like, three-way? It makes no sense. Unless Strowman's hurt again, why would Strowman not be part of this? You're either doing a singles match or you're doing a four-way. There ain't no three-way here. And it should be a four-way. Now, if you do a four-way, it would be a cheap way to get the title off Brock without actually having to beat him for it, which would be basically WrestleMania 31 all over again. Remember, Brock lost the title, but he was never actually pinned. But what I like about it, I'll tell you what I like about this. What I like about it is that all four of these guys have beef. That segment on Monday felt as real and as intense as anything on the show in forever. It reminded me of late 96, early 97 WWF, when you had, it was like the top four or five guys, Bret, Shawn, Sid, Undertaker, Steve Austin, everybody walked around pissed off every single week. They were all pissed at each other. They all wanted that WWF title. They even had a Final Four match at one of the pay-per-views, although Vader was in the match because, you know, somebody forgot to pack his smile in his luggage that week. But watching these guys out there, it sort of felt like that a little bit, and that's what I really liked about it. I love the segment. The other thing I like about the four-way idea is that, realistically, anybody can win. You can't say, well, there's only one or two guys who can really win. No, honestly, any of the four could walk out with the championship. It's anybody's match to win. Brock could retain. It is not a foregone conclusion that Brock Lesnar is dropping the title at SummerSlam. Remember, the idea up until recently had been for him to defend it at WrestleMania. That could very well still be the idea. So Brock could retain, Roman could win, which would shock no one, probably by pinning Braun, since he lost the ambulance match. And then I guess Joe and Brock would kind of cancel each other out. They could brawl to the back or something. Strowman, quite frankly, could win. Braun Strowman could win this thing. He'd be the dark horse out of all four, but maybe that's why they would do it. But Strowman absolutely could have a run with the title, or they could do the right thing, and they could give it to Samoa Joe, which is what I would do. Now, I will say this, though. If they pin Samoa Joe on Raw tomorrow night, if Roman just beats him straight up, and then Braun comes out or something, but if Roman just beats Samoa Joe tomorrow night, and I know Joe beat him twice, at some point you got to expect Roman to get the win back, but we're talking about SummerSlam here. If Roman beats this guy straight up, it would be the single dumbest thing they have done all year. And that includes that awful abortion of a This Is Your Life segment. Pinning Joe in this match would be worse than that. That would be two straight losses, by the way, for Joe. Lost to Brock, now he would lose to Roman. That cannot be allowed to happen. And I know someone in that company is saying, you know, hold my beer right about now. It cannot happen. It should not happen. It cannot happen. As far as the main event, it was an extended version of the match we got the night before with Seth Rollins and Bray Wyatt. Curtain jerkers one night, headliners the next. I was not impressed. They basically did the same finish. Bray hit Rollins in the eye that he had injured the night before. And again, he pinned him with Sister Abigail. Best thing I can say about this is that Bray Wyatt now has two straight wins over Seth Rollins. The fact that Bray Wyatt now has two straight wins over anybody is an improvement. So here's a golf clap for Bray Wyatt. Match itself, nothing special. Miz and his entourage came out after the match. They surrounded the ring with Rollins inside. You knew where this was going. Dean Ambrose comes out, runs down with a chair, makes the non-save, I guess you would say. I'm not here to save you, even though I am. He makes the non-save for Seth Rollins, and that is how that ended. Now, the Kurt Angle stuff. This was the other big thing on the show. Corey Graves and Kurt Angle got another one of their text messages. I'm still trying to work out exactly what role Graves has in all of this stuff. I haven't quite figured that out yet, but Kurt said that if this gets out, if this big secret gets out, he'll be ruined. He says he cannot let this get out because it could destroy him. And then, in the very next breath, he says, I have to go public with this. What? What? Maybe his doctor has been texting him and he's got dementia. Because that makes no sense. One minute he's like, I can't let this get out. And the next minute, fuck it. Let's just get it all out there. So Graves tries to reassure him everything's going to be fine. He doesn't sound very convincing, but he's at least trying to say the right thing to Kurt. Show ended with a shot of Kurt on the phone with his special someone. He said, why don't you come here next week and we'll both do it together? Neither of us have anything to be ashamed of. I'm proud of you, and I hope you feel the same way about me. Whatever happens, happens. I love you. Now, they've since announced that Kurt is going to be doing a live interview on the network after Raw goes off the air tomorrow night. They better not hold the big reveal for that, 3 hours of TV just to get to the post-show. But I would imagine that the show will end with the big reveal, and then they'll have Kurt on the network to talk about it. But they've really built this thing up so hard for so long. Anything but an amazing payoff or some gigantic swerve that nobody sees coming is going to be disappointing. I feel like they've totally set themselves up for disappointment here. I leave it in their good hands to give us a payoff that's worthwhile. They timed this to climax a few weeks before SummerSlam, which makes me think that it almost has to lead to a match for Kurt at SummerSlam. Otherwise, what's the point? And if that is the case, then the most likely scenario, I admit, would be the most widely rumored, which is something that leads to a Stephanie McMahon return, because you knew it wasn't going to last forever. You knew Stephanie was going to be back at some point. And the revelation that Kurt and Stephanie had maybe a one-night stand, maybe they had an affair back in the day, back when they were doing the love triangle storyline with Triple H. And that leads to Triple H coming back and the two of them having a match. I don't know that I buy that, though. I don't know that I buy that. Kurt let it slip recently, and I know it's Kurt, so take what he says with a grain of salt. But Kurt claims he still has not had a physical. And if that is true, I can't see WWE building this storyline up for months with the idea that Kurt Angle is going to wrestle a match. The big payoff is that Kurt wrestles at SummerSlam without them first having given him a physical and knowing that he can be cleared to compete. There's absolutely 0% chance of that. So either he's full of shit and he was cleared weeks ago, or it's not a match that they're building to. It's something else. Now, the other widely rumored idea involves the person being none other than delusional Dixie herself, Dixie Carter, right? They timed her appearance on the network last Monday on purpose to coincide with her Raw debut the following week. They are in Nashville, which of all the places, possibly except Orlando, she probably would get the biggest reaction. Whether it would be positive or not, that I don't know. I cannot for the life of me see this happening. I just can't see this happening. I just can't. I cannot see Stephanie and Dixie sharing screen time together unless the idea is to bring Dixie in and absolutely bury her. Just bring her in and humiliate her. Now, Vince did send Eric Bischoff out in a garbage truck when his run was over. So, never say never. But no, I don't honestly believe that Dixie Carter is the big reveal. And I don't want to believe that. And so I feel like if I keep telling myself that it's not her, I'll start to believe it, and I won't start to freak out because I do not want to see Dixie Carter back on TV. And they cannot be that stupid to think that that would be a good idea, right? You know that gif of Batman putting his head in his hands and saying, I don't want this? That pretty much sums up my thoughts on Dixie Carter being part of the storyline. The theory that I'm going with is that the person he said I love you to is not a lover. It's not a woman at all. Maybe that's the swerve. And no, he's not gay. We're not getting a gay Kurt Angle storyline. At least I hope not. Gay Kurt Angle should not be a thing, by the way. Not when he has a wife like that. If you saw that special on Monday, which I'll talk about the documentary in a second, you saw his wife, whew, holy cow. Now, I think the big reveal is that he has a love child, and the love child turns out to be Chad Gable. He told the person, come to the show on Monday, right? So it would make no sense for it to be a member of the Raw roster. Member of the Raw roster would be there anyway. Gable has gotten more TV time in recent weeks, seemingly out of nowhere. He lost both of his matches. He lost to Kevin Owens. He lost to AJ Styles. He was impressive in both, but he lost. Like you would if you were on your way out of the territory, so to speak. If he was on his way maybe out of SmackDown, then it doesn't matter. He can lose all of his matches. They do that a lot of times when somebody goes from NXT to the main roster. You lose on your way out. This could be a way to push Chad Gable and get him on Raw. I'm really big on this guy. And yeah, you know, it's goofy. It would be it's a goofy storyline. But, you know, it could do for Gable what the Vince McMahon bastard son storyline could have done for Ken Anderson. You know, Gable's 31, Kurt's 48. So that would mean Kurt knocked up Mrs. Gable when he was 17. And when I tweeted this out, somebody suggested Dixie could play the role of Mrs. Gable. I still don't want her on the show, nor do I know what the statutory rape laws are in the state of Tennessee, nor do I care. But the more I think about this, I know it doesn't really fit the description of like a blockbuster announcement. I don't think it rises to the level of something Kurt would have to fear losing his job over. But I'm going with that as the payoff. I may be wrong, but that's my prediction. A lot of you guys seem to think it could turn out to be not Gable, it could turn out to be Jason Jordan instead. Jordan hasn't been on TV much, if at all, over the last several weeks. He's not injured, as far as I know. It's almost like they're hiding him for some reason. I personally would rather it be Gable, or both. I just think the comedy potential is there with those two working together. I mean, Chad Gable is a great wrestler. I don't want to turn him into a joke or anything like that, but one of the things that I've said this before that I like about Gable, if you saw him in NXT, we haven't really seen it on the main roster as much, but if you saw him in NXT, he's got the comedic chops. He's got the comedic timing like Kurt did. Kurt took to this like a duck to water. Kurt was awesome when he first came in, right? He could wrestle, but nobody knew that the guy could be so damn entertaining. Chad Gable reminds me of a young Kurt Angle when he first came into WWE. And now the two of them, let's say, working together on the same brand, or Angle being a mentor to him, even the comedy potential, I think, with those two is off the charts. But I think working with Kurt, having Kurt's endorsement would do him wonders, and I'm all in favor of a Chad Gable push, so part of it maybe is wishful thinking, but again, that's the payoff that I am predicting here. So Kurt Angle's Olympic semen produced Chad Gable, and then maybe Kurt could fight with Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon to get Gable on Raw, or he can bring both American Alpha guys over, and they could do so, or they could do some sort of trade. We haven't seen very many of those. If it's Stephanie, you know, I can't see her with her great corporate image that she now has wanting to do, like a one night stand storyline or an affair storyline. I can't see Triple H wanting it either. That may be the bigger reason, but we probably are getting Stephanie back on TV soon. Whatever it is, it better be big. Because they've set this thing up for so long to leave us with a big cliffhanger like that, you better deliver in the end. Whatever it is, you better deliver. And kudos to them, by the way, for promoting two big things for TV this week. You know, the Angle story, the Reigns Joe match for the SummerSlam shot. Those are two big things. I expect Raw to do a very good number this week. And they have me very interested to see how this all plays out. I did mention the Kurt Angle documentary, the 24 special aired on the network after Raw Monday night. It was very, very good. It's an hour long. If you have not seen it, you owe it to yourself to go watch it. It's that good. I did feel cheated. I did feel like a little bait and switch action when him and Vince McMahon first embraced in Vince's office for the first time in 11 years. Because they put that in the previews. Right, you think, oh, this is going to be interesting. We get to see the first meeting between Kurt and Vince. And as soon as they hug, Vince tells the camera guy to get the hell out. So I'm like, really? That's all you're going to show? What a bait and switch. But no, seriously, it was great. And it's so good to see Kurt in a better place than he was before. He's got a big family, 5 kids, beautiful wife, back in WWE, in the Hall of Fame. The only thing left for him to do is wrestle. You know he wants to. And as long as his body can hold up to one match a year, 2 matches a year, fine, if he can get cleared. But to see where he was when he was getting popped seemingly every other week for a DUI while he was in TNA, to where he is now, and he's got that Angle Strong app, and he's trying to help people. I mean, Kurt Angle's story could have had a very tragic end. That's the path he was going down, just like Jake Roberts and Scott Hall before DDP got a hold of him. Kurt cleaned himself up, which is even more impressive. And, you know, Kurt will go down as one of the best of all time, I think. I don't know that you can rank him the best just because his run was so short. It really was, compared to a lot of other top guys, in terms of their time on top. Kurt just did not have a lot of time. He even said that in the special. He really was only in WWE for 6 years, maybe, barely? And then he had more time in TNA than he did in WWE. But Kurt's going to go down as one of the best of all time, and you didn't want to see his story have a sad ending. And it's not over yet, right? Anything can happen, but he's doing well for himself right now. They did have Dixie on there. They did show, I think it was like newspaper clippings or something. They didn't outright like say TNA, but TNA was kind of up on the screen. There was no footage of any of his matches there or anything like that, but you know, her time on the special was limited, but I felt like it was appropriate. I mean, Kurt worked for her longer than he worked for Vince. Think about that. That's kind of crazy to think about. And, you know, in some ways, him being able to go to TNA and having the more limited schedule probably saved his life. You can't do a legitimate, honest special about Kurt Angle's career and not acknowledge the fact that he spent all those years working for another promotion. You can't just pretend that they don't exist. I know they do most of the time, but it would have really hurt the documentary, I think, to just ignore it and gloss over it. They did that with Sting. Remember when Sting came in? I forgot what it was. It might have been a random comment on TV, but it's like, the way they built it was like, for 15 years, Sting has been, and it's like, yeah, what has he been doing? They didn't even have a good answer for what he was doing. It's like, Sting's just been kind of hanging around, biding his time. He's been gardening for 15 years. It's like, really? Are you that fucking petty? Can you just not acknowledge that this guy went and worked somewhere else? It's like, they're so cooped up in their own little cocoon. They really do. Like, they call it the universe. They're in their own universe. And it's like, you gotta pull teeth just to get them to acknowledge that anything else exists. At least Triple H, like in NXT, he doesn't seem to mind as much. They're always dropping references to other promotions and this guy came from Ring of Honor and this and that. And they do a little bit on WWE television. JBL's always dropping New Japan references and stuff. I mean, they do it, but, you know, I was happy to see them at least acknowledge it here. And if you didn't see the special, definitely go back and check it out. It's very cool. SmackDown Live from San Antonio. Twitter poll, 1,600 votes, 68% thumbs up, 32% thumbs down. Positive rating, although again, I did feel like Raw was the better show this week. AJ Styles made his first appearance as the new United States Champion. They aired footage of the title change from MSG. He announced the return of the U.S. title Open Challenge. And John Cena, ironically, who created the challenge, was the first one to come out and accept. And how appropriate seeing these two back in the ring in San Antonio after the Rumble earlier this year. Kevin Owens and Rusev, though, they came out just as the match was about to begin. They broke it up. This led to a tag team match in the main event. The one thing that was very noticeable watching this show is that the U.S. title is now clearly the top title on the SmackDown brand. I saw that, I think it was Matthew of Botchamania, he tweeted out a photo this week of all the U.S. champions so far this year, and they're all top names. Roman Reigns, Chris Jericho, Kevin Owens, now AJ Styles. Styles is superior to Jinder Mahal in every way. He is in far more TV main events of late than Jinder is. You know what the Jinder thing reminds me of? It reminds me of when they all but gave up on the first brand split, and they would trot the World Heavyweight Champion out there on Raw in the opening match. Like, you'd have the opening talking segment, then go into the first match, and it would be a world title match on a show where you already had the WWE Champion, like, was featured in the main storyline and main events. The world title was basically an undercard belt at that point. It was purely a prop. And that's kind of what his run here reminds me of. You know, to wrestle in the opening match, which is what happened here. They have Jinder wrestling job guys. They have him wrestling Mojo Rawley and Ty Dillinger. Jinder feels only slightly like more of a star now than he did 6 months ago. The title has not done much to elevate him as much as he has brought the title down. And I'm not trying to knock him by saying he himself is doing a terrible job. He's doing what he can. You know, he's trying to make the most of what they've given him and what he's doing. I can't lay all the blame on him. His positioning on the show is a big part of it. But Jinder Mahal has no business being WWE champion. My mind has not changed from when they first put the belt on him. I thought maybe he would grow into it. He would be sort of this revelation. He's really not been. He's got a nice act with the Singh brothers and all that, but it's not a main event act. It is not a main event act. And it's clear that the U.S. title is going to largely take precedent most weeks over the WWE title until that belt comes off of him. Now, we had Charlotte, Becky Lynch, Natalia, Tamina, and Lana all arguing backstage in front of Shane McMahon. They're all going to be part of a fatal five-way elimination match at Battleground next Sunday to determine a new number one contender for Naomi's Glow belt. Boy, they sure do love their multi-women matches, don't they? Not a creative bone in their body. And yes, this is the same Lana who lost in three straight title matches to Naomi the last time, fair and square, in 11 seconds by submission. She is once again getting a potential championship opportunity. And Tamina, I gotta say this. Watching this show here, her trying to speak. Remember when she repeated the same line that Charlotte used a few weeks ago? Like right after Charlotte said it and time just sort of stood still. She said something else on this show. I forget what it was. My God, is she terrible. She is really bad. She really is. Main event on the show was Styles and Cena against Rusev and Owens. Styles gave Rusev the phenomenal forearm. Cena finished off Owens with an AA. He got the pin. Styles and Cena came face to face to end the show. Cena held up AJ's arm. This really, I left a lot of stuff out because, you know, there was really nothing of note. There was really nothing of note on this show. It was a nothing show. Not a bad show. I can't say anything jumped out at me and offended me, but it was boring. Raw was better than SmackDown this week. Now, speaking of SmackDown, there's another big story here. WWE has aired the final regular weekly episode of Talking Smack. That episode that you saw last Tuesday, that was it. And this was news to all of the people who worked on the show, from the hosts all the way on down to the other staff members. Nobody knew. WWE canceled the show and didn't tell anybody. Renee Young, who I thought did a great job as the host, found out about the cancellation on Twitter when John Canton, TJR Wrestling, shout out to John, he tweeted her about it. She didn't know. She had no idea. She said, "Oh, that's news to me." John broke the news to her. Daniel Bryan, who co-hosted with her on most weeks, although Shane McMahon was kind of doing a lot of that lately, I guess, since, you know, his baby was born, baby birdie and all that. But Daniel Bryan went on Twitter. He had no idea. He let everybody know that nobody tells me anything. He also found out about it online. And poor Renee, she didn't just have one show canceled, she had two shows canceled because somebody tweeted her asking if her show Unfiltered, she did these one-on-one interviews with people, asking her if Unfiltered was canceled, and she said it was. And she was not happy about any of this. She said, really disappointed about Talking Smack. We tried to make that show great. Guess I'll go back to welcoming my guest at this time. Throwing some shade there at WWE. See, even Renee knows. Even Renee knows they're all robots. All those women backstage were all robots. So this was WWE's official statement. They said, we continuously review WWE Network programming based on a variety of factors, including viewership and subscriber research. Talking Smack and Raw Talk will air following pay-per-view events, and Tuesday will continue to feature 205 Live. Oh, well, shit. We still have 205 Live, guys. Don't be so bent out of shape. Thank God we got 205 Live. What would I do without it? PW Insider had their own report up, and they said the crazy thing about all this, the crazy thing about Renee, they had her in Stamford. She was at WWE headquarters filming stuff with Mean Gene Okerlund when the news came down. She was there. She was in Stamford, in studio, and nobody told her. Nobody knocked on the door and said, hey, can I talk to you for a second? She still had to find out about it from someone else, from a fan on Twitter. And it sucks because Talking Smack was a great, great supplement to that SmackDown show. It really let a lot of those guys like Mojo Rawley, like Baron Corbin, like The Miz, like Kevin Owens, but more so guys like Rawley and Corbin, even Jinder, when he first started getting that big push. Guys like that shine in ways that they don't, or they don't have a chance to, on the main show. Because everything is so scripted, or they just don't get enough time on TV, whatever it is. But, you know, on Talking Smack, these guys were allowed to go on there and be more like themselves and not be scripted. And it showed. You know, I've heard that they often got bullet points and stuff, but it was an unscripted show. Anybody with two functioning eyeballs and two ears could tell that. Go back and watch those shows, listen to the verbiage, and compare it to what you would hear them saying on SmackDown earlier in that same night. You could hear the difference. See, somebody like Kevin Owens is great at this because Kevin Owens has a way. Some guys just have a knack of being handed awful dialogue, but being able to kind of turn it into their own voice where it doesn't sound so forced, where it doesn't sound so phony. There are some guys who can do that. I feel like a guy like Joe, a guy like Owens, those guys can do that. A lot of guys can't. Talking Smack was unique in that some guys were bad, right? Some guys just can't talk. So they'd go on Talking Smack and not everybody on that show always came out looking good. But it kept you honest. And then other guys, like Corbin, when I first saw him on Talking Smack, I was like, holy shit, where's this guy been? That's what I really liked about the show. That's what I think the show really had value. It was a character-building vehicle. And the unscripted nature of the show that I just mentioned a few moments ago, it appears, based on a report from Sports Illustrated late last night, this whole notion of, well, it didn't get enough viewers, it was a viewership issue, is complete bullshit. And as it turns out, it was a Vince McMahon call. Sources tell Sports Illustrated it was Vince McMahon himself who axed Talking Smack. Apparently Vince is not showing up to these TV tapings and shows as often as he used to, but he was there on Tuesday. And so he was in the back watching Talking Smack, and he did not like what he saw. According to Sports Illustrated, he didn't believe the show served the company's best interests. And in the end, it was the unscripted nature of the show that ultimately played a role in its removal. And here's the other kicker. We heard that, well, you know, Talking Smack is still going to be around for post-pay-per-views, right? So, for example, Battleground next weekend, there probably will be a Talking Smack after that. But in this report here, it says that even though that may be the case initially, that the long-term plan per Vince McMahon is to completely eradicate the program. So basically, Vince McMahon, as we thought, because we kind of joke about it, that some of the things Daniel Bryan, for example, would get away with saying on that show, like you would think to yourself, Vince must not be paying any attention. I used to watch the Edge and Christian show on the network and think the same thing. There ain't no way that Vince McMahon is watching any of this network programming because he would never allow any of it. That's why it was so fun. And sure enough, that's exactly what it looks like happened here. Vince McMahon was not paying any attention or wasn't paying close attention to talking smack until he was. And when he did, he didn't like what he saw because he couldn't control it. It was unscripted. What is this? We have an army of writers. How come they're not writing the show? And that was it. Done. Axed. This was a Vince McMahon call. It never really made any sense to me, though, about the viewership stuff because, and they don't publicly release like ratings and viewership numbers. Somehow the Observer, though, every week has a listing of the top 10 or top 20 network programs. And Talking Smack is almost always in the top 10 or top 20. A lot of weeks, Talking Smack does better than 205 Live. So that never really made any sense to me. The whole notion that, well, it doesn't get enough viewers. I should have known. I should have figured it was a Vince McMahon call. And that just makes me even angrier about this whole thing. Because this guy is too stubborn and too stupid to see the value in something like this because he is so stuck in his ways. And this right here, if this is true, this is a perfect example as great and smart and savvy as Vince McMahon is, greatest promoter of all time, right? He doesn't get it. He doesn't get it. This was a character-building vehicle. This was a great supplement to that SmackDown show. And apparently, according to Vince, it works against the company's interest. No, it works against his interest because he can't control it. And if he can't control every little detail, he doesn't like it. You have something fun, the first thing you do, you kill it. That's really what's going on here. This doesn't have anything to do with poor viewership or anything that any of the people on the show did. I mean, no wonder when they ended that show on Tuesday, they all figured, okay, we'll see you next week. No wonder they were all blindsided by it. Because the old man got wind of what was going on. That just pisses me off even more. That this guy can't see the benefit of having a show like this. That this guy can't see how this benefits the product. You know, we talk a lot about what is wrong with the product right now. How do you fix Raw? How do you fix this? How do you fix that? And I always say we could all come up with our own ideas about what we'd like to see or push Raw back from 3 hours to 2 hours and all this stuff. At the end of the day, it starts at the top. And if you don't have a change at the top, nothing ever really changes. And people like to make fun of Vince McMahon. He's out of touch. You know what? This right here, this is clear evidence of that. Here's one case, at least, where we can honestly say this man is completely, hopelessly out of touch. If he honestly does not see how this could benefit his product, if he honestly does not see the value that a show like this brings to the table. That's to me, that when I read that was the most infuriating thing about this whole thing. I mean, it sucks that Renee and all of them got blindsided, had to read about it on social media. That was shitty enough. This really pisses me off. This really does. It's one thing to axe it, but then that explanation, that he doesn't see the value in it because, you know, the unscripted nature of the show, it's the scripted nature of the show that's just strangling the creativity, I think, out of a lot of people on that show. A lot of the performers who don't have the kind of freedom that they should have, who don't have the freedom that guys would have had 15 years ago. And that, to me, is really the biggest thing, the biggest distinction between the current product now and the product as it was back then. Forget PG and TV-14 and all that stuff. It's this stifling of creativity. It's this stifling of this certain level of freedom that guys once had and they no longer do. And so you ask yourself, you know, guys that got over back in the day because they had a hot catchphrase or this or that, you know, how many guys like that have we missed out on in the last few years because you got to stick to the script, because they got to go word for word, they got to memorize this and that, and who knows how many more, like, big-time legitimate stars we'd have right now if they had a little more freedom in that regard. But he just has to have his tentacles sunk into every little aspect of the show. The guy's 71 years old, he doesn't get it. And he never will. Not anymore.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
Another former Ring of Honor name debuted at the most recent set of NXT tapings. If you don't want to know who, skip ahead about a minute or two. Former Ring of Honor world champion and one half of Red Dragon, Kyle O'Reilly, finally made his long-anticipated NXT debut, losing to Aleister Black at the tapings. I assume because he wasn't actually signed to a contract yet. Pro Wrestling Sheet says a deal is imminent but has not yet been signed, so why would you put a guy who's not under contract over one of your biggest young stars? Would really not make a whole lot of sense. Now, his Red Dragon partner, Bobby Fish, made his NXT debut in a losing effort as well against Aleister Black, although he has since been signed to a deal. In fact, that match opened up the NXT show this week. Nigel McGuinness was really putting Fish over hard on commentary. Mauro Ranallo talked about him wrestling Kazushi Sakuraba in Japan. Mauro dropped some other references that would have gotten him an atomic wedgie from JBL had he said that on SmackDown. Black Mass by Aleister Black for the win. I enjoyed this. Not for a second did I believe that Black was going to lose, but I still enjoyed it. But this is a case, I think, with these two guys, with O'Reilly and with Fish, where as talented as they are on their own, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. They need to be together as a team. I said a few weeks ago, DIY is DOA. So Red Dragon can take their spot as the resident popular babyface team on that brand. We got a vignette, speaking of teams, for a brand new one called the Street Profits. Angelo Dawkins, who's been around NXT forever, and Montez Ford. Angelo Dawkins is the one who did that annoying stirring the pot shit with his hands. I used to call him the baker. He always looked like he was baking a cake. So the baker is back. Vanessa Bourne qualified for the Mae Young Classic with a win over Jamie Hayshi. Two women I do not know, and I was not impressed by this match. Hopefully the Mae Young Classic is not just a tournament full of matches like this. I think we could do better than this. William Regal met with Bobby Roode backstage, told him the next week it's going to be the Battle of the Undefeateds. Drew McIntyre against Killian Dane of Sanity. The winner will meet Roode for the championship in Brooklyn at TakeOver. Johnny Gargano made his return to Full Sail for the first time since Tommaso Ciampa betrayed him. He wants to be at TakeOver Brooklyn, he says, no matter what. He needs to be Johnny Wrestling again. And there was no indication of what his next program is going to be. If I had to take a guess, maybe Almas. Maybe it'll be him against Almas at TakeOver. Or maybe just a straight-up war, one-on-one with Roderick Strong. I think that match would go over nicely in Brooklyn. We'll see. He has new music now. He came out to the DIY theme, but he left to a brand new theme. And the main event was Heavy Machinery against the Authors of Pain for the NXT Tag Team titles. Heavy Machinery, Otis in particular, is just so much fun to watch. They did this great sequence where he was in the ring with, I don't know if it was Akam or Razor, one of the Authors of Pain. And the Authors of Pain, they're big dudes, so they're used to running people over. I mean, look at who they've worked with. They work with Gargano and Ciampa, right? Those are smaller guys. It's very easy to run them down. One of them tried to run right into Otis. Otis didn't even move. It was awesome. So they go for their finish. I think it's called the compactor. But it got broken up. Unfortunately, the end came quickly for Heavy Machinery. Last chapter. Otis was the one that got pinned. That really bummed me out. It should have been the other guy. They pinned Otis. Authors of Pain retained the tag team titles. When the match was over, Sanity's music started, and we saw it was Killian Dane and Alexander Wolfe. They were ripping pages out of what I guess was supposed to be the Authors of Pain, the book that Paul Ellering usually has, his diary, perhaps. Eric Young was not here. I thought maybe he had a death in the family at the last tapings, because he hasn't been around in a while. So I don't know what the deal is. Eric Young was not here, but the other members were, and that's how they went off the air. So Not an overly exciting addition to the show, but definitely newsworthy in that we got a tag team title match, and we had the debut of Bobby Fish here in NXT, and things are progressing nicely here on the road to take over Brooklyn. I don't sense a whole lot of buzz around this takeover show, but it's still, about a month away? There's still time. We'll see what happens. I think I would say it's pretty obvious what the main event is going to be of that show. I'm not giving any spoilers out here, but we're going to have our number one contenders match this week. I'm guessing Drew Galloway is going to go over. It'll be Galloway and Rude. I talked about this, I think it was last week, and I said I'm not so sure that I would put the championship on Drew just yet. I might just have Bobby Rude win the first one and then have Drew maybe win the title in the rematch. I just feel like Drew's been on ice for so long here. He hasn't really done much. That to just put him on, put the championship on him when Bobby Roode has a good thing going right now, I think would be a mistake. Lucha Underground. This show, title was A Phoenix to a Flame. That was the official title for the show. This show had one of the more violent scenes that I have seen on a wrestling show in a very long time. Far more violent than anything you'll see on WWE television. Definitely not a PG ending. With that show closing angle with Phoenix and Marty the Moth, which I'll get to later. We kicked off, though, the second round of the Cueto Cup with Taya against Jeremiah Crane. Taya held her own in there. Taya can hang with the boys. I'm still not a fan of the whole man-on-woman stuff. I'm just not a big fan of it. But she held her own. She took a lot of hard shots, a lot of hard kicks. Crane won in the end with the cranial contusion. He advances to the next round, but I thought Taya looked good here. Taya always looks good. Sexy Star came into the ring after the match, and she walloped Taya with a pair of brass knucks, which was, I guess, her revenge for Taya bringing brass knucks into Sexy's match the week before, which led to her loss. Mil Muertes destroyed Paul London of the White Rabbit Tribe to advance in the Cueto Cup. London hit two shooting star presses back-to-back on Muertes, and both times he could not pin him. He could not finish him off. Mill hit the Reaper's Trident, hit the Flatliner, got the pin, and Katrina crawled on top of London to give him the lick of death. Still the best finisher in all of wrestling, and I will fight anyone who says differently. We went to a scene at a bar where the beautiful Brenda approached Tejano. Famous B is still trying to recruit Tejano. Famous B, if you're listening right now, you can do better. This is way too much effort to be putting in for Tejano. So Brenda starts flirting with him, but then she calls him boring and dull. And I laughed so hard. I just laughed so hard. Never has more truth been spoken on this show. So this pissed off Tejano, and she told him all he needs is a woman's touch. And we saw Famous B in the background watching all of this with a smirk on his face, up to no good. Main event was Phoenix and Marty the Moth in the second round here of the Cueto Cup. Marty does not like Phoenix because he's got a fling going, Phoenix does, with Melissa Santos, and Marty is still obsessed over Melissa. And so that's kind of the genesis of the bad blood here. Marty brought a lunchbox into the ring with him. He shoved a sandwich in Melissa's mouth as she was doing the ring intros. She was not very happy about Marty shoving his meat in her mouth. Long story short here, Phoenix pinned Marty. Melissa even got involved in the match. First time I think she's ever gotten involved physically in a match here on the show. She stopped Mariposa from giving Marty, I think, the lunchbox at one point. After the match was over, Marty attacks Phoenix, lays him out. He opens the lunchbox, he pulls out a fork, Abdullah the Butcher style, pulls out a fork. And he then begins to stab at Phoenix's forehead with the fork, and Phoenix is just bleeding like crazy. Mary poses outside the ring, holding Melissa Santos, forcing her to watch. Melissa is begging him to stop. Marty licks the blood off Phoenix's head. He licks the blood off the fork. This went on for a disturbingly long time, I thought. It may have only gone 2 minutes or 2.5 minutes, but it felt like double that. It was disturbing. That's, I think, the best word I could use for this segment. It was It was violent. I thought that it was good in that we haven't seen this side, the sadistic side of the Marty the Moth character. I don't want to call him a comedy character because that's not fair, but this was the first time that he really came off like a dangerous SOB. So I like that sort of development in the character. Did this have to be as violent? Well, you know, I probably could. You know what I could have done without? And I will never like this. I think it's just fucking nasty and I just don't like it. The licking of the blood, like, do we really need that? Do we really need that? You know, my favorite match in Lucha Underground, I think still, was from, I think it was the first season. The first ever Grave Consequences match, Mil Muertes and Phoenix, ironically. And I love that match, but the one thing about that match, you had the part in the match where Mil licks the blood off of Phoenix's forehead. It's like that angle they did many years ago in Ring of Honor, where Jimmy Jacobs, Age of the Fall. It was the Jimmy Jacobs group with Seth Rollins and all those guys. And they had one of the Briscoe brothers, I think it was Jay, hanging upside down. They tied up his leg. He was hanging upside down and he was bleeding all over the place. And I remember Jimmy Jacobs literally taking a bloodbath. He stood underneath Briscoe as he was showered in blood. And he was kind of trying to catch it in his mouth. And I'm just like, that's fucking sick, dude. Like, what the hell's wrong with you? Like, there are just some things I think that go overboard. That's one thing I'll never like. But as far as the violence of it, like I said, you know, it was disturbing but cool. And it made you look at Marty, I think, in a different way. Where going forward, if he's got that more violent edge to him, you know, it may be more fun to see what they have in store for Marty in the future. I mean, he's a crazy guy. I think he's got that character down pat. I really do. I think he's done a great job with it. But this was a heavy angle. No doubt about it. This was a heavy angle to end this show. And so that was Lucha Underground. And now let's take some mailbag questions and wrap it up here because I don't feel great. But I'll always have time for some of your questions. You can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. There were a whole bunch of emails I got that some of them I wanted to use, but there was no name. You know, and I don't always want to just take the person's name from the from header in the email because maybe they don't want me to. So I don't use your questions. So just try to make sure you include that information. Jad wrote in. During the build-up for John Cena's most recent of many returns, he was billed as a free agent. As of yet, he has still not appeared on Raw. Though not exactly the same, they did something similar with The Undertaker on SmackDown 900. He said that SmackDown has always been his home, but then he failed to show up for 2 months, and when he did, he only appeared on Raw. Does WWE's creative team suffer from dementia, or do they think that we do? I think it's a little bit of both. I think they think we're stupid. Sure seems that way when you look at how they've booked so many things over the years. I think they think that we're stupid. The Undertaker thing was really dumb. The John Cena thing, look, he just came back. I assume that after he beats Rusev at Battleground, so probably not this Monday, but the following Monday, we'll probably see Cena on Raw. We will probably see Cena on Raw a week from tomorrow, would be my guess. And if we don't, then yeah, it was kind of dumb to build him up as a free agent if he's only going to show up on SmackDown. Jordan, see here. We've already established that NXT needs a secondary title. Well, I mean, some people might disagree with that. I agree with that idea that they should have a secondary title in NXT. I don't know that everybody does. Anyway, he says, what about the main roster? Raw's main event scene is crowded and SmackDown has too much talent. Do you think that Raw or SmackDown should come up with another championship or do they need to do something else? No. I think Raw and SmackDown are fine as far as titles go. NXT, sure. I would have no problem adding another championship to NXT. So you have the main title, one secondary title, the women's and the tag team, and that's fine. Raw and SmackDown, they have enough titles. We don't need more. Ben in England. Misha Tate did a Q&A on her podcast back in May and was asked if she would consider going to WWE or making an appearance like Ronda Rousey did. She was very complimentary of the athleticism of the performers and said that she would love to do something like that if they approached her. I'm surprised her comments did not get more pickup. How would you utilize Misha in WWE if given the chance? It's funny you bring that up. Like, did you see the way that Sasha Banks went off on Alexa Bliss on Raw Talk last week? I saw the video online. She went off on this girl. She didn't grow up a wrestling fan. She doesn't have the passion for it. I would love to see that Sasha do something with Misha if she ever came in. I don't know what kind of aptitude that Misha would have for wrestling. It probably wouldn't be too hard for her to pick it up. Obviously, she's an athlete. But there's a ready-made story right there with Sasha. She's kind of the queen of Raw, right? Taking exception to somebody from the outside walking in like they own the place and getting the spotlight. I mean, that would be an idea that I would pitch, doing a storyline like that with Sasha Banks and Misha Tate. Paul from St. Louis. Have you been following the Floyd Mayweather-Conor McGregor press tour? Do you agree with the projections of 7 million pay-per-view buys? And what do you think of Triple H inviting them to come on Raw to promote the fight? Should they? I've only loosely been following the press circus that they've been on the last few days. They just wrapped up their big media tour, even though the fight is still over a month away. I did see them get booed out of the building here in New York. I think they were over at Barclays. That's what happens when you make people wait 90 minutes for a press conference. I'd be pissed too if I was standing there waiting for 90 minutes. As far as pay-per-view buys, you know, I heard the same thing. I've heard 5 million buys, 7 million buys. You know what? I'm going to take the under on that. I think it's going to do gigantic business. I think it's going to do big box office and set records and all that, but I don't think it's going to do 5 or 6 million pay-per-view buys. I think it'll be just under that. I really don't think it's going to do more. But yes, Triple H has invited Mayweather and McGregor to come to Raw to promote their fight live in the ring. Would I want to see that? You know what? If they put a camera in the truck with Kevin Dunn so we could see his reaction every time one of them drops an expletive or an F-bomb, that I would like to see. Even if it's like a little, you know, like when people go on like YouTube or Twitch and they do their gamer videos and you see the little box with them, like the little webcam in the corner, just put a little box in the corner with Kevin Dunn just to film his reaction. I think that could be entertaining. I certainly would not want him in a big box on TV. Put him in a little tiny box. Yeah, I'd be fine with it. You know, I think it would make for good car crash TV. What I think would really be cool is if they could somehow find a way to use their appearance to not only promote their fight, but to somehow put one of their own guys over, like Joe or somebody like that, like they did with Austin and Tyson back in the day. Although that was a specific angle setting up for a WrestleMania match. It's not like Tyson was there to promote a boxing fight. But I mean, if we're being honest here, let's say this happens. Let's say they take Triple H up on his offer and they agree to go to Raw. You know what WWE is going to do? They're going to get The Rock. They're going to get The Rock to probably host the segment or something. And I get that. I understand why they would do that. But at least if you're going to take time out of your own television show, use it to get one of your own guys over. Or just, you know, give one of your guys the rub. That'd be my mindset. It wouldn't be hard to take somebody like Samoa Joe and have him get up in Conor McGregor's face for all the shit that Conor has said about the WWE guys. You know what? It would actually make that entire roster look like a bunch of pussies if nobody stepped. I don't care if it's Joe or someone else. For all the crap that Conor talked about the WWE guys, even if it was all an act, and the WWE guys, you know, they completely fell for it, hook, line, and sinker, he still had a lot of, like, publicly very bad things to say about them. If he ends up on their show and they don't have anybody come out to confront him about it, how does that make their own roster look, right? It would make the whole roster look really bad if nobody stepped up to confront the guy. My big question is, if let's say Floyd takes Triple H up on his offer to come on Raw, does that mean that Michelle Beadle has to turn in her fan card again? Can somebody answer that for me? Johnny from Wynn, Arkansas. I've noticed that for about the past 4 Raws and SmackDowns, superstars like Neville, the Hardys, and AJ Styles have done their entrances without the use of pyro. Would you happen to know why this has stopped? They even stopped the exploding sound when Sheamus and Cesaro come out on the ramp. Yes, those are called concussions. Concussions in wrestling come in all types. I would assume, cord cutting. Cord cutting has nothing to do with it. Cost cutting, that's what it is, plain and simple. From time to time, they stop using pyro for the show opens. I think it's unusual for them to stop using it for actual wrestler entrances. But in the end, it all comes down to cost cutting. That stuff costs a lot of money. That really does. I mean, it costs a lot of money. I have to say one thing, though. Now that you brought that up, and I just thought about this. Road Dogg is very interactive on Twitter, and I think that's really cool, and he seems like a nice enough guy. He was going back and forth with somebody after the Great Balls of Fire pay-per-view because somebody was upset that, oh, you know, the set was so unimaginative, and I thought that they would have a unique set for it. And I forgot exactly, I should have written it down what Road Dogg's response was. But again, he takes the attitude of, like, it doesn't matter, it's not a big deal, and stuff like that. And I think that's such a destructive mentality to have. Like, you want to cut costs and not have pyro as often, I get that. But that guy made a really valid point, right? They had a 50s theme going into that pay-per-view, and I thought it was a very creative open to the show, the way they did it, like the drive-through movie and all that. I kind of like that. I like the. I mean, I thought the name was stupid, but I like it when they do theme shows like that. But back in the day when they would do theme shows like that, the set reflected that. And I don't think that it's so ridiculous for fans to be like, oh man, I wish that they put some creativity into the set and the stage. Even if it was just having some 1950s era's cars on either side when guys walked out, or like a, maybe make the entranceway look like a makeshift drive-in movie or something. You know, and I don't think you have to spend $5 million like they did on the WrestleMania, allegedly spent on the WrestleMania set this year. The WrestleMania set this year was unbelievable. It was the best stage and setup they've had for any show ever. But they don't have to spend $5 million. How difficult would it be to bring in some cars and have like a special sign or something? It wouldn't be that hard. But if that really is the attitude of the people in that company, I think that speaks volumes of what they think of their own product, that they don't feel the need, frankly, to put that sort of thought and creativity into these shows. I think that's the wrong attitude to have. I thought that person had a very valid point. Adam from the United Kingdom. I was wondering why RVD was never ECW World Champion in the company's original run. He was obviously the most over guy and arguably the best worker. He had awesome matches with Sabu, Jerry Lynn, and many others. Why did Paul Heyman never make this happen? I mean, time-wise, probably just they went out of business. I would think that if ECW stuck around a few more years, no doubt RVD is getting the title. No doubt. Now, he had that long streak going with the TV title, right? I think just shy of 2 years. Then he got hurt. He broke his ankle. And so that probably didn't help. Maybe if he didn't get hurt, maybe he would have ended up with the championship. But, you know, he already had the TV title. You're right. He was one of the most popular guys in the company. He probably did more to elevate the TV title than anything else. And I think at that point, the company went under. Had they not, he would have been the guy. I mean, you could argue he was already the guy, even without the belt. But had they stuck around a few more years, he would have totally gotten the championship. There's not a doubt in my mind. Brandon, we'll end with this. Brandon from Sevierville, Tennessee. When the WWF switched to WWE, were there any associated fines with announcers or wrestlers out of habit using the old initials? I would certainly hope not, given the fact that Vince McMahon himself slipped up and called it WWF many, many times, even years later. So unless he fined himself, they had no business fining anybody else. And we'll end there. My voice is going and I don't feel good. So we will cut things a little short this week. By the way, Fire Pro Wrestling, for those of you into that, if you were a big fan of the Fire Pro Wrestling series back in the day, if you're into games and all that, Fire Pro Wrestling World is now available. I know it's up on Steam. I nabbed it already for my laptop. I'm getting familiar with it. I probably will do a Sound Out Gamer on it, so I'm hoping maybe sometime in the next week or so. I want to just familiarize myself with it, see if I could import. You can actually, I think, import creations from the network that other people have made of actual wrestlers, so it's pretty cool. It's actually pretty cool stuff. We'll do a gamer sometime in the next few weeks. That'll be up on the YouTube channel. Again, you could find the Great Balls of Fire video. If you missed it, that's up on the YouTube channel as well. Thank you to everybody who took the time to check that out. We will be back with a brand new podcast next weekend. That will be episode 505. We'll have Battleground predictions, since there's another pay-per-view next weekend. We don't have enough of those. So that'll come up next Sunday, as usual. And I want to thank everybody for your support, whether it's just spreading the word, PayPal, t-shirts, Audible, what have you. I want to take a moment here just to thank everybody for your continued support of the Sound Off. Very, very, very lucky to have all of you as fans and listeners of this show, and just know that that does not go unnoticed or unappreciated. So I'll see you guys back here again next weekend. Until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week, and we will see you back here again for more Sound Off next time. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, "Wait, aren't you going to put any pants on?" He just goes, "No time for pants," and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. You see, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now, for all you know. No time for pants.
Sala Monster sounds off.
Since 2007, the Sala Monster sounds off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Sala Monster sound off.